Welcome to the Freedom Report.
What I love about Austin Peterson is his love of the battle. He wants to fight.
Austin was, of course, the rabble-rouser, just to make sure I stayed Rothbardian.
We live in a world fraught with danger, and there is a certain amount of danger that the public must endure in order to secure the blessings of liberty.
For economic freedom and personal liberty. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Austin Peterson here. Welcome back to the Freedom Report podcast. Today is Monday, October the 29th. Hope you had a great Halloween holiday weekend. I sure did. Had a nice weekend and probably on the road to Columbia, Missouri this morning. As you're listening to this, if you're listening to this early when it comes out, 7 o'clock Central Time, 8 a.m. Eastern Time. The Freedom Report podcast drops twice a week, Monday and Wednesday. And if ever there is a special occasion, if I'm hanging out with Dennis Rodman on the weekend, chit-chatting about North Korea, or maybe, you know, doing a little photo op with Ben Shapiro, then maybe I might get an excuse to be late like I was last week. I'm just name dropping y'all just because I had a good time. But I hope you enjoy the show today. Today we're going to be talking about a hit piece. Oh, this is so much fun. This is such a great way for us to start our Monday morning, because last night I was reading an article that came out on Politico that mentioned me. It had my name in it. It came out, and I hadn't noticed it. Popped up in my Google News alerts. Sometimes I don't get those a few days later. And what did I see but an article in Politico? And wow, it's a wonderful story about Bitcoin. And I'm going to read to you this article from Politico by Christian Hernandez. And then we're going to talk about it because I love stuff like this and because I get to be part of the story. This is even more fun. Cool. So Politico writes a story and the title, of course, what more could you expect? Is Bitcoin secretly messing with the midterms? Ooh. Subtitle: 4 years after Bitcoin was allowed in federal elections, most states are still in the dark about how to handle the donations. Democrat Brian Ford raised nearly $500,000 of Bitcoin for his unsuccessful bid for a California congressional seat this year, but then had to field questions from election watchdogs about a contribution from Hong Kong. Republican Austin Peterson, a U.S. Senate candidate from Missouri, received the largest single Bitcoin donation in federal election history. Boom, 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 boom! But was forced to return the virtual currency in June because it exceeded federal contribution limits. See, that's incorrect. Of course, if I had talked to the press, if I had talked to this reporter, I could have cleared that up. Maybe they would have gotten that right. Although, I doubt it. Moving on. Let me correct that real quick. So when he said I was forced to, or excuse me, when Christian said I was forced to return the virtual currency in June because it exceeded contribution limits, I was not forced to return the single largest Bitcoin donation in federal election history. I was forced to return a different donation, which you mentioned later on in the piece, and you even tweeted it, and you still got the story wrong, Politico. Libertarian Phil Anderson, who's running for governor in Wisconsin, decided to continue accepting crypto contributions, even though Wisconsin, like most states, has not decided how to regulate or track crypto contributions. Good for you, Phil Anderson, libertarian in Wisconsin. He decided to continue accepting crypto contributions anyway. Good for you. Wait up. That is some, a non-violent resistance that I like to see. In an era of Russian hackers, oh God, see, this is how you know it's fake news. Now, you see why I didn't talk to this reporter, but I'll go on more. In an era of Russian hackers, super PACs, and shell corporations being used by foreign entities to influence voting, officials tasked with maintaining the integrity of state and local elections have one more thing to worry about. Crypto candidates, officials, they call themselves officials tasked, right? So meaning you, yourself, right? The Center for Public Integrity. Oh, this is a Center for Public Integrity, guys. It's right in their name. The Center for Public Integrity found 20 crypto candidates of various political stripes seeking all levels of office who have been requesting or have received cryptocurrency to support their efforts. At least three were candidates in a state that has since banned such such donations. This is me. You can't see me, but I'm biting my fingernails. Oh my goodness, their state's banned it. Another was accepting cryptocurrencies marketed as untraceable. The confusion over campaign cryptocurrency is widespread. Yeah, obviously, because of articles like this, which don't get their facts right. And the implications are far from isolated. Oh, it's spreading this disease. But the effort to establish uniform rules is lagging behind. It's like we need the order, right? This is where the authoritarians, they assume control. Cryptocurrency is like the Wild West in terms of regulation. Yeehaw! Hell yeah, said Joseph Aguirre, a cryptocurrency analyst with ICO Alert, which maintains a comprehensive list of cryptocurrencies. This is the new way of raising money. It's no surprise that politicians are jumping on board. You think? Since Bitcoin began to trade in 2010, it has been linked to illicit activities, including money laundering and fraud. See, this is what they do. They're sliming it like crazy. It has been linked to illicit activities, including money laundering and fraud. Most recently, foreign state actors have used it to try to influence U.S. elections. Oh, studies show cryptocurrency users can employ pseudonyms and transfer virtual money across international borders with just a few clicks, involving no intermediaries or banks. Unlike cash or checks that campaigns have historically depended on, the source of some cryptocurrencies cannot be inspected easily by the public, despite efforts for election transparency. That's bullshit. It's not difficult for the public to be able to inspect this, because here's the thing. If you want to use that money, it's not like you can use cryptocurrency to buy buttons for your campaign or bumper stickers. You can't use cryptocurrency to buy a Freedom Express bus, right? You can't use cryptocurrency to buy the gas that you need to get around the state when you're campaigning. Of course you can't. So what do you got to do? You got to convert it to dollars. And once you start using dollars, well, that's the money that you have to report to the FEC. You have to report your expenditures and your intakes and your outflows. It's really not that hard. Anyways, and the rules and regulations are already there. If you raise a certain amount of money, you're required to report that to the FEC. Like it's not like there's like some technology where the FEC is intercepting all transactions to a bank account. But I mean, I'm sure that they would absolutely love to be doing things like that. During a June Senate Crime and Terrorism Subcommittee hearing, right here it is, right? They're just smearing the shit out of it. They called it Protecting Our Elections. I remember that. Examining shell companies and virtual currencies as avenues for foreign interference. And who do you think that's going to be behind that, of course? Election experts illuminated the scope and threat of virtual currencies that are now used by more than 3 billion people. The greatest emerging threat of foreign funds reaching the coffers of political candidates. Oh no, they might get money and then they have to report it. They can't. It's already illegal to take money from people overseas. The greatest emerging threat of foreign funds reaching the coffers of political candidates or to be used to fund other influence operations are the increasing number and liquidity of privacy coins, testified Scott Duquecke, director of threat analysis company Dark Tower. Even so, the FEC, the U.S. agency tasked with enforcing campaign laws, decided to allow Bitcoin contributions in 2014. Praise be Jesus. But on the state level, those donations are subject to a patchwork of policies. At least 8 states, plus the District of Columbia, allow crypto contributions and have created limitations or added language to their election manuals addressing the issue. At least 7 others, though, have banned cryptocurrency contributions altogether, fearing foreign meddling. Yeah, I'm sure that people for the town council seat, like, I'm sure that Vladimir Putin's really interested in meddling in your local elections. Or insufficient resources and knowledge to regulate Bitcoin contributions. California, so often a state breaking new legal ground, you can say that again, was the latest to act last month, banning those types of contributions to candidates running for state house. I feel so bad for all my friends in California. Run, friends. Come here. Come to the Midwest. Actually, don't come here. Don't go. Go to Kansas. There's plenty of room in Kansas. But leave California. Go to even Colorado. Well, don't go to Colorado. They're getting pretty packed already. But leave. Go to Arkansas. It's great down there. You'll love it. I promise. California, Arkansas. My bad. All right. Just vote against Beto O'Rourke, by the way. If you're in Texas, California, you vote against Dianne Feinstein. Well, I don't know what I'm doing. Anyways, hardly a day passes that there isn't some other indication. California sucks is what I'm trying to say. Anyways, California Commissioner Frank Cardenia said during the September 20th fair regarding political practices, he said, hardly a day passes. There isn't some other indication that there's someone out there who wishes us ill, foreign and or domestic. Oh, that's what the California Commissioner Frank Cardenia said, that a day pass. Oh, hardly a day passes. There isn't some indication someone out there wishes us ill, foreign and or domestic. Oh, really? Well, what are you picking up on my vibes, Frank? Are your ears burning? Because maybe I do wish you ill if you're that idiotic that you say such a blatantly bland, platitudinous statement. Hardly a day passes. There isn't some other indication. Oh, well, the only thing that's missing from that statement is, and we need to keep our children safe. And then he says, the acceptability of cryptocurrency in California elections, for now, it's not worth the risk. So is cryptocurrency a hazard to democracy as geographic boundaries dissolve in this digital world? Or is it the dawn of a crypto future? That depends on who you ask. A study published in January by the Center on Sanctions and Illicit Finance, a program of the Foundation for Defense of Democracies, this is all lefty bullshit, and a cryptocurrency analyst found less than 1% of all transactions entering conversion services worldwide were linked to illicit activities, including money laundering and online extortion. Ah, well, nice. And experts at the forefront of this financial technology argue that Bitcoin could actually bring more transparency to the democratic process. Oh, well, I take back the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies drag there. You guys, sounds like you're doing good work. That Bitcoin could actually bring more transparency to the democratic process by offering new unhackable tools to track money in politics. But cryptocurrency analyst Argyro said, unless regulators decide which coins politicians can and can't accept, more than 2,000 different virtual currencies existed in mid-October, compared with about 1,500 in early March of this year. It'll be hard to ensure Russian hackers or other bad actors are not funding U.S. elections using cryptocurrencies, right? The Center for Public Integrity found it's nearly impossible to identify actual crypto contributions in some state campaign finance reports. It's definitely important for the states to put in political surveillance on these types of campaign contributions, he said. But the industry is so new that the tools are still being developed to facilitate that surveillance, and that's why people are fearful. Oh, gosh, we've got to get some control up in here. And it goes on, and they're breaking it down. And then they did mention at the very end, they posted my tweet. They say the FEC's opinion states Bitcoin should be valued at the time of the contribution and held in a virtual wallet, but candidates must report any earnings or losses from its sale, which can be dramatic given its volatility. In 2010, when Bitcoin was first traded, a single Bitcoin was valued at less than a dollar. In December 2017, its value exceeded $17,000 per Bitcoin. Peterson, moi, the Republican U.S. Senate candidate from Missouri, made headlines when he posted on his campaign's Facebook account on June 18th. To whoever tried to give us $130,276 in Bitcoin on Saturday, we had to refuse your donation. Please donate $5,400 to our website in order to comply with FEC regulations. Also, start a PAC or something, mate. Hashtag cryptocurrency. Peterson lost the GOP primary bid to challenge Democratic incumbent Senator Claire McCaskill. Multiple requests for comment to Peterson went unanswered. And rightfully so. It is, you know, when you think about like what it is, why you do media, why you talk to the media, you know, you shouldn't always take every excuse that you can to talk to the media. One, I'm not a candidate. I'm not running for anything. And two, I don't trust that these reporters are going to get their story right, even if I do give them an ultimate clarification, which I've done with many reporters. And I've had a lot of reporters ask me about Bitcoin, and you can tell that they're sincere and they're earnest and that they're really, you know, they really want to learn. And in even when they really work hard to try and get the story right, they still get it wrong. I remember when I did an interview here on Channel 5 during the campaign, and I was talking about ghost gunners. And I can't tell you how many times they got that story wrong. The press kept getting it wrong. They said it was a 3D printing machine. Well, it's not a 3D printing machine. It was a lathe, right? Essentially, it was a, you know, a way for you to mill a, or not a lathe, excuse me. The gun aficionados are going to nail me on that one. It's not a lathe. It's a mill. It mills metal. And it's essentially, you know, I mean, most people don't know what that is, and I understand crypto currency is definitely more difficult to understand, but, and I want reporters to get it right. But the problem is that when you're the one who gets quoted, and if they get it wrong, then it makes you look bad. And then you have to call the reporter to try and get have them fix it. And then nobody reads the retraction, or they probably don't even print one most of the time. Trust me, I've been in the business. I know how it works. And you know, when they're coming at you with like, oh, we're Center for Public Integrity and stuff. Like the reason why so many reporters kept calling me, and most of them were left from like left-wing think tanks. They're like, how come we don't see Bitcoin on your FEC contribution if you say you got Bitcoins? And I go, it's because I said this multiple times during the campaign. We immediately converted the Bitcoin to cash and we reported it as a cash donation. We did that so that we didn't have to worry about if the value inflated from 7,000 a coin to 8,000 or 10,000 or 14,000 a coin. We didn't have to worry that there would be any campaign finance violations because we made sure that every single person who gave us money, we were in full compliance. I mean, we worked hard on compliance. And it's all of the money that we raise is there and publicly available. But I talk to reporters, I try and explain these things to them, but they don't understand. So that's why I did not respond to comment. I mean, wouldn't you love to be in a great Politico piece about Bitcoin? Of course. But you know what? I was in the piece anyway, and I didn't have to comment to the reporters. So there's just a little lesson for you kids. You know, don't always talk to reporters, especially not at CPAC if you just got done taking your picture with Richard Spencer and then Salon wants to ask you questions, because that happened to a kid. And I watched it happen. He didn't know who Richard Spencer kind of was. He just was like, oh, he's the frog meme guy. Oh, yeah, he likes Trump. I like Trump, too. And then the kid proceeded to get destroyed by the left-wing media because they just were like, you know, they called him a white nationalist. Like, I remember the poor kid who's like crying. His mom called because she read the news. She was just upset because the news was making him out to be a white nationalist, and he's just like a high schooler or a college student. It wasn't even like he was just so young. Anyways, all right, guys. Well, it's time for a little bit of bonus. You guys want to have a little bit of fun? Let's get to the quote section. What do you say? Thanks for sticking around and listening to the Freedom Report podcast. Really appreciate you guys. Before I get to the quote section, do me a favor. If you haven't already subscribed to me on Patreon to support the Freedom Report podcast that you're listening to, please do so today. Even a $5 a month donation helps me to bring these podcasts to you 8 times a month, twice a week, and maybe even more if we keep in bringing in those Patreon people. And I'd love to be able to hire some new talent around here at the Libertarian Republic. You can go to patreon.com/AP4Liberty. So in today's section of quotes, I'm going to be reading again from the Quotable Hitchens, one of my favorite books. It's yellowed, it's dog-eared, it's underlined, it's highlighted. It's got everything that you do to a book that you've read multiple times, and the binding is starting to come off. Stains all over it too. But I'm going to be reading from Christopher Hitchens, the Quotable Hitchens, From Alcohol to Zionism, in case you wanted to follow along with it. Great little book, quote book, very thoughtful quotes. But today I'm going to be reading some very interesting quotes that Christopher Hitchens said about Thomas Jefferson. Now, before we continue, I want to warn you that if you are easily triggered, this is not for you. This is a section, this is for thinkers. This is where people come to listen to stuff and they can open their mind and not be triggered, because Christopher Hitchens here says some really spicy things, and I like spicy food, and I like spicy thinking. So just because I'm reading this doesn't mean I endorse what he's saying. In fact, many times I disagree with him, like I said, I have to give that caveat, but I want to be stimulated to think. And here, writing about Thomas Jefferson, he says, he's criticizing liberals. He says, the real symptom of a PC bore, by the way, is a tendency to stress the fact that Thomas Jefferson was a slaveholder. Very true. It's like every time Thomas Jefferson comes up in a conversation, you're trying to have a high-minded conversation. It's like whatever good he did, the PC, politically correct bore, will bring up the slavery topic. And here, Christopher says about Jefferson, he says, modern and postmodern historians are fond of using terms such as inventing America or imagining America. It would be truer to say of Thomas Jefferson that he designed America or that he authored it. I like that idea, because if you think about in our modern politics now, we're talking about making America great again. In some sense, we're really trying to remake America. And with at least that's what this whole MAGA concept really is about, right? Going back to the 1950s, you know, Ozzie and Harriet style. But I like the way that Hitchens talks about what Jefferson did, that he designed America. He didn't imagine it or invent it. He was literally the architect, or one of the major architects of it. He says here that he seemingly never tired, Thomas Jefferson, seemingly never tired of having to be persuaded and cajoled to take high office. He never got sick of having to be persuaded and cajoled. He liked to be asked. That would be nice. Jefferson's view was that those who shouted the loudest about foreign influence were themselves the principal agents of it. Now think about that in context of what we're talking about here with Russian scandals and Russian interference, especially after that discussion we just had about Bitcoin. The record as it comes down to us makes it possible to state that without Thomas Jefferson as president, it is in the highest degree improbable that the United States would exist as we know it today, or even as we knew it a century ago. And so true, because if you think about just the wonderful things that he did while he was president, some things that he did that were not so great, but one of the things that he did was the Lewis and Clark expedition. And the Lewis and Clark expedition resulted in the discovery of the Missouri Territory, which is where I live right now. And of course, then it got settled by Mormons, and it turns out I actually live in the Garden of Eden, which many of you don't know, but Jackson County, according to the Mormon faith, where I am currently residing, Jackson County is the Garden of Eden. But Lewis and Clark didn't know that yet because it hadn't been invented, or at least the Garden of Eden hadn't been discovered that it was there. Anyways, it is the Garden of Eden here, guys. It's a miracle. You guys should check it out. Kansas City. It rocks. So he goes on talking about Thomas Jefferson. Jefferson is one of the few figures in our history whose absence simply cannot be imagined. His role in the expansion and definition of the United States is too considerable, even at this distance, to be reduced by the passage of time. Very true. Now, here he's going on and talking about some of the issues related to Thomas Jefferson. So here, this first quote is about Thomas Jefferson and the Barbary War. If you're not familiar with the Barbary War, then this quote might not make sense to you. But I highly recommend, actually, I have this book with me, this other book, by Brian something, like, of all people, one of the Fox News hosts, actually, Brian Kilmeade, wrote a book about Thomas Jefferson and the Barbary Wars, and it's actually a really fantastic book. Highly recommend that. Surprising. Brian Kilmeade. But here, Christopher Hitchens is talking about Thomas Jefferson, and he says, in essence, Jefferson's policy was an unalloyed triumph for peace and the freedom of trade from blackmail through the exercise of planned force. So just to kind of break it down for you, what was happening is that American sailors were under threat from pirates, from Corsair raiders off of the coast of now what is now considered Libya, like North Africa. And so Thomas Jefferson built the Navy and sent in the troops to take out the Barbary pirates. And there's a really amazing adventure story about Stephen Decatur and all of the American men during the time of fighting sail and what the United States was doing and how Thomas Jefferson fought the pirates. Because what Christopher Hitchens is saying here, he says that what he did was a triumph for peace and the freedom of trade from blackmail, because of course they would have to pay bounties and tributes, and Americans would get put in jail and they would be hostages and they would have to pay to free the hostages. So it was quite a crisis but the United States, you know, not being a world power like we are now, it's hard for us to think about it, but at the time it was hard for America to respond to that. We didn't have a strong navy to protect our merchant ships trading in the Mediterranean Sea at the time. And so we had to build a navy. And Thomas Jefferson built the damn navy and sent in the Marines. From the halls of Montezuma to the shores of Tripoli, we will fight our country's battles on the land and air and sea. Remember that? Yeah, I bet you do. This is Christopher Hitchens writing about Thomas Jefferson and the Bible. Thomas Jefferson took a razor to the New Testament and cut out everything that was evil, silly, or mythical. This left him with a very short edition. This is Christopher Hitchens' words, by the way. He's talking about Thomas Jefferson and Sally Hemings here. Christopher Hitchens writes, "Part of my education in the subtleties of racism had been learning to cope with American historians who could easily accept that Jefferson had owned Sally Hemings and had indeed acquired her as a wedding present from a man who was his father-in-law and her actual father, this making the girl his wife's half-sister. But these same scholars could not bring themselves to believe that in addition to inheriting her and owning her, our third president had also gone so far as to have effed her." Bad word there. Thomas Jefferson. Now this one is a real thinker. You're really going to have to put your thoughts together and think about this one. This will be the last one, I believe. Yeah. And he's talking about Thomas Jefferson and slavery. "Jefferson took the same view of Haiti as he had of Virginia. The abolition of slavery could be as dangerous and evil as slavery itself." A very interesting point of view. Something to think about. Because, of course, if you don't know, 1776 the Musical is a great show that you can watch. If you hate musicals, it's still a good one. But the 1776 the Musical covers the signing of the Declaration of Independence, and the fight between the North and the South that was brewing was happening there at that convention, because Thomas Jefferson, John Adams, and Ben Franklin wanted to abolish slavery at the foundation of the country. They saw hypocrisy in a Declaration of Independence that declared all men equal, and yet this one race of people were not equal. But what Christopher Hitchens was quoting, talking about Jefferson, is that he was analyzing that Jefferson believed that the abolition of slavery might be as evil as slavery itself. Well, of course, what we know is at the time, at the Revolution, on July 4, 1776, the deal with the devil that the northern colonies made when they banded together to form the Declaration, to band together, was that they put aside the issue of slavery, knowing that it would come back. And it did, 100 years later, in the Civil War. Thank you for listening to the Freedom Report podcast. I hope you enjoy these podcasts twice a week. Don't forget, you can support me on Patreon, patreon.com/AP for Liberty. And of course, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, all AP for Liberty. AP, the number 4, AP for Liberty. Thank you so much. Have a great week, folks.